Over the weekend, President Trump criticized the result of the Kentucky Derby, where apparent winner Maximum Security was disqualified for running out of his lane, making Country House the winner. President Trump said this was not a good decision, the result of political correctness. So, in other words, he's saying that the popular vote should have won.
Hundreds of Justice Department officials say that President Trump would be facing multiple felony charges stemming from the Russia investigation if he were not president. Lucky for him, his presidency protects him just like his man bra.
Joe Biden's wife, Jill, says she told off her husband when he characterized President Trump as a clown. Dr. Jill Biden insists that going forward, he exclusively referred to the president as a, quote, half-wit Neanderthal with sun-kissed skin and a mushroom dick, allegedly, unquote.
A recent study found that the traditional white lab coat worn by doctors is teeming with bacteria and drug-resistant, is teeming with harmful and sometimes drug-resistant bacteria, which is exactly why I asked my doctor to slowly remove it and make himself more comfortable.
No, take it off a little slower. And finally, according to the latest Rasmussen poll, 57% of Democrats believe that Trump is guilty of treason, which is the only time we've heard the term Democrat and 57% in the same sentence since 1996. The Trump Report starts now.
You're tuned in to AfterBuzz TV, the ESPN of TV talk. Now, let the buzz begin.
Yes, welcome to The Trump Report. I'm Christian Blatt, joined by Laughmeister General, the greatest sense of humor that I could have on my left, Chelsea Galizia.
Hi, thank you for that.
And then at the other end
of
the
desk. And then a real stick in the mud right here.
Yeah.
The actual comedian.
And our friend, Scott Moore.
Oh, now I'm like just a casual friend.
Yeah. Oh, no, we've definitely friend zoned you. You're definitely in the friend zone at this point in the show. There's a lot of exciting news to talk about. Some of it horrifying, some of it less than exciting. But Scott, you weren't here last week, so shame on you. No, you weren't here last week, and I wanted to kind of get your thoughts on something we spent a good chunk of the show talking about, which was this New York Times editorial. It was really an article, but it was laced with opinion. The question was, should a white male represent the Democratic Party in 2020? And my answer was, if you, one, think they can win, and two, that's who people vote for in the primaries. What are your thoughts on that? Should they be starting from a point of winning or a point of we need to have something more representative of our party, whether we win or lose?
Well, I think it's actually a little bit of both. I think it's going to be determined of what the electorate in each state, like we were saying, what the primaries wants to have. Now, me personally, I'd love to see some new faces rather than Joe Biden and recycling, you know,
I'm pretty
older
sure
people.
He has a new face from about 30 years ago. I don't know that this is the same face that he had back then. But anyway, go ahead.
True. Like, okay. But me personally, I would prefer that. But I think we have to go with what the majority of Democrats are going to vote for. And if they collectively feel that Joe Biden or Bernie Sanders is the man to defeat Trump, then that's going to happen. It's just so early to even speculate with so many people in the field. But part of the issue with so many people in the field is I think there will be people very shortly, you know, that are going to kind of rise to the top there, and we're going to see what's left. But me personally, yes, I would love to see new faces, and I'd love to see the new representation of what's going to be the future of America and not what's been the past. But it'll be up to the voters. And
is this your opportunity to announce that you're running for
president?
Yes. I felt like that's where that statement was going. It seemed obvious. You've got my vote, so that's...
Yes, I want to be the
are
I don't
you
know,
not
20,
a white
20,
male?
20, 25th.
But he's not old. He's
I'm
not old.
Oh. I'm a young white man. Yeah. And I'm gay, so I'm going to take the Pete Buttigieg vote.
Oh, man. Mayor
vote.
Pete would be like, come
we're gonna,
on!
We're going to split the vote, so that's what we're going to... We're going to split the gay vote.
One more question for everyone on this. I think we're... Are we up to, I think we're up to 22 now. Mm-hmm. Is it early enough where that's not too many? Or Chelsea, is there a concern that, okay, it's getting a little silly that this many people are running for president? It's hard to keep track of who's good.
I don't have room for concern about that.
So you just,
like, the more the merrier.
All right. I mean, it worked out so well when, what, like 150 people ran for mayor. I mean, not mayor, but governor of California. I voted for Todd Bridges. I'm sorry, what were you going to say, Tamara?
I just love that phrase. I don't have room for concern about that. I'm going to be using that a lot now.
Yeah, it's like reclaiming my time. It's like that same kind of...
It's so Scarlett O'Hara. I'm not going to think about that today. I'll think about that tomorrow.
Tamara, as someone who writes jokes as part of her living, is there someone that you hope never stops running for president? Is there somebody that's just a fountain of opportunity for jokes?
I think every time a comedian has been asked, well, aren't you happy that Trump's president? Because it's this fountain of possibilities for you. And it's like, no, I'd rather not. The folly.
No, I'm just talking about all the Democrats. I want Pelosi to get in.
Who would be the best fodder?
Yeah.
I think they're all pretty boring, aren't they?
Even Joe Biden?
Yeah, because I'm pretty I'm already annoyed at jokes about the touching, because that's such a non-issue to most women I know, and to make jokes about that just seems so, like, really reaching for something?
No, I think that's a solid point,
so
obviously.
So to speak, reaching for something.
Grabbing, massaging for something. No, I think that your opinion is not in the minority there. I think Biden was talking about how he just last week talked to Margaret Thatcher about very much that same point. And, you know, I think that there's plenty of other things to make fun of him for that.
Absolutely.
But then not something in terms of jokes, but his wife, Jill Biden, who I mentioned at the top of the show, was on the Today Show this morning. And she was asked about his handling of Anita Hill, which comes up pretty regularly. And Joe Biden feels that, it's in the past, we should move past it. Anita Hill has not accepted his apology. Chelsea, do you think we should move past it just because it was a long time ago and people are tired of talking about it? Or should we move past it for another reason? Or is it still a fair question?
I think it's a fair question. This one, it's still, boggles my mind. Last week, I saw a tweet exchange between... Please remind me of his name. The activist Sean
Scott Moore. He's right there. Yeah, I know it's hard to keep track, but
come on, help me out here. A lot of Black Lives Matters issues.
I'm not, the uh-oh is because I have no idea.
Okay.
His name escapes me, but he posted something.
Is he a celebrity? Is he a Twitter personality?
He's a very well known. I think he is a journalist and an activist. Sean King.
Okay.
Yes, thank you.
Oh. Sure.
He tweeted something about Joe Biden that he did a long time ago. It might have been how he, helped this mass incarceration movement. And Simone Sanders, who I cannot for the life of me believe, who is now on the Biden campaign, who was in 2016 Bernie Sanders' communications director, if I remember
correctly. I'm just going to interrupt. Sanders, no relation?
No relation.
Okay,
no.
Because if there was relation and she was on the Biden campaign, that's a fascinating story that I didn't know how I missed it. Anyway, go on.
Her response to the tweet was, this was a long time ago. People evolve. People grow. People change. We should all allow to... do that. Yes, I would agree. And some things that you did a long time ago say something about who you are, no matter the time.
Mm-hmm.
You can't, I think, be progressive just because now that is cool. You should have been the same, ideally, all through the past 30 years. Something that some people give Bernie crap for. But actually, that is one of the endearing things, is that he's been very consistent. So I would say, yeah, some people change, evolve, and you can have room for them to do that. But I think that this is a fair question, because there's not really a solid response that he's given. There's not something really that says, oh, I can see how he was there and his journey to his newfound approach and appreciation for what she did and coming forward and there's just not an answer that's comfortable for people to understand their journey. If somebody changes their mind, evolves and grows, great. But tell us logically how that occurred. What made you change your mind besides it just became cool to listen to women and actually believe them?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think that, you have a completely different issue that a lot of people have to sort of answer for is, anyone who voted for an Iraq war that then they're like, oh, I wish I hadn't. But you can't pretend that you didn't vote for it. And like, just explain why you did. Tamara, sort of the same question. Is it time to move on from Joe Biden's handling of Anita Hill's testimony, like Jill Biden says?
I also agree that it is. Who was the woman that responded to the tweet?
Simone Sanders.
Simone Sanders. Mm-hmm. I think I agree with her. Because if we're going to ask every white male what his opinion on sexual harassment was in 1992, I think we're going to not have any heroes. I think, remember Hillary and Barack Obama both voted against gay marriage mm-hmm. in the early 2000s. So people evolve not just because of pressure for what society is putting on them, but I do believe that pressure of what you are supposed to say as somebody who's a liberal person. But I do believe that will also put an open-mindedness into your head that you may not have otherwise had.
But the difference, I think, is that, and I don't even remember what Barack Obama said, but I do remember that he acknowledged it and talked about what drove the change. And that at the time I remember being like, okay, that makes sense. It's funny. I don't even remember what he said, but I remember my own sense of, oh, okay, that makes sense. I can follow that logic. Here, I don't see that.
That's fair. Mm-hmm. I mean, he might not have given any, I haven't listened to his personal comment on the matter, so I don't know. I generally do like when I hear him, his feet held to the fire on anything. I do usually like whatever response he has to it. I haven't listen to what he's had to say about the Anita Hill case. So, yeah, I mean, that's fair. I can, if somebody says you're saying you don't like the way that he addressed it. But I'm just saying that, like, yeah, no surprise that this guy
was. The response of it's time to move on is not acceptable to me. I don't know how
it's sort of like
you.
A condescending,
dismissive.
Like,
it's dismissive. It's minimalizing. Yeah. It's diminishing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I agree. But I'm just saying, I think we would be hard pressed to find somebody in Joe Biden's position who was on Anita Hill's side at that time, in that era.
Well, a very different time where, a Republican-nominated Supreme Court nominee would actually get a hard time from both parties instead of just the, the opposition party. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of people who are guilty with the handling of that situation. It obviously is something that could very well have. I don't know. I think people were maybe surprised that Clarence Thomas was nominated after the fact. But now it just, it just seems so crazy, when you think about like how long he's been there. But the
longest now modern, out of everybody on the court. So.
Yeah. So, I think, I don't know, I think it's always a fair question. And I don't know, I think just, Biden and Mrs. Biden just should have a good answer. Well, if that happened today, this is how he had to handle it, and he regrets that he handled differently at the time. Don't you can never get angry when somebody has a question, especially, with any of these sort of issues.
I will say that exact response, though. What did he say? Let's move on from that, though.
Well, Jill said this.
Oh, yeah. Jill said that. Yes. Okay. I do feel that what has helped Trump and so many of the Republicans get on the side of their base is that willingness to be dismissive about things. Like, yeah, I said it. Let's move on. Whereas Democrats tend to apologize and fall over themselves, apologizing. So, again, I'm not defending.
Yeah, 'cause we're looking for logic.
I'm not defending his response at all, but I'm just saying I do think it could be in his favor to be a little bit more brash. I mean, Bernie's like that, like unapologetic, sort of like, I say, I say what I want, I do what I... That's not... I mean, Bernie's never said that, but I'm just saying...
No, but the spirit
sort of
is,
this no-nonsense attitude of, I'm just not apologizing. I do think that could help, that we do need that a little bit more in the Democratic Party.
I wanted to start with our legal counsel here to my left, Chelsea Galicia. The White House is instructing Don McGahn not to comply with the Democrat subpoena I don't understand any of this. Mm-hmm. Does he have to? Can he do it if he wants to? Or, I don't know, what are the rules of this? And is it, as always, just subject to interpretation? So it's hard to say.
Kind of.
Okay.
But we can, let's go big picture. First big picture, Congress is a co-equal branch of government to the executive, in other words, to the president. And Congress has the responsibility for oversight of the executive.
Okay.
So we're coming from that angle first. So subpoenas in, trying to obtain documents and testimony in an effort to provide the oversight that they are, you know, constitutionally obliged to do, you know, there's that's a major win for the Congress's desire to subpoena these records. Okay. The exception that I believe the president, and I'm hearing the Republicans say, is that, well, this is the president's counsel. So there's such thing as attorney-client privilege, except that Don McGahn was not President Trump's attorney. Don McGahn was the White mm-hmm. House counsel, which is different from being somebody's personal mm-hmm. attorney. That's one thing. Second thing, Don McGahn is now just a regular civilian. He no longer works in the White House. So, sure, he could testify or provide whatever documents are being subpoenaed. The Trump administration can sue to try and stop him or do whatever they want to stop him. But they cannot stop it altogether. If the Trump administration wins at all, it would be to prevent McGahn from answering certain but very specific and narrow questions. Because if there is any privilege, it is very narrow. So it's not a blanket, like you just can't get up there at all. But it would be very narrow. But this is all just to say that this is a long shot for them to just delay and not comply. But the Constitution is on the side of the House who's trying to subpoena these records and testimony.
And then sort of a similar issue in terms of whether or not the Attorney General Barr can be held in contempt for refusing. Is his current job give him sort of privilege that he wouldn't have otherwise?
The job does give a lot of privilege, but again, when a co-equal branch of government is doing its constitutional obligations of oversight, and within that, they need the Attorney General to cooperate, the Attorney General must cooperate. Mm-hmm. So to be held in contempt would be reasonable and lawful. Mm.
But if you had to guess, Tamara, are we gonna hear anything from either of these guys anytime soon? Let's put it that way. they'll both write books at some point, but right now,
these guys. Do you mean McGahn Republicans and Democrats,
no, or McGahn and Barr in particular?
And yeah. Barr, are we gonna hear from them?
Say yes.
Well, objection. I'm pretty sure you were leading the witness, counselor. I hope you don't do that in court.
My counsel has advised me to say affirmative. I do not. I think every time we're holding out hope that something is going to be in favor of
the truth.
Yeah, mm-hmm. the truth. And it justice. Always works out in Trump's favor. So I doubt it.
And the protocol, I was going to say, and just proper protocol that we've always lived by until this president decided to throw everything away. I would say McGahn before Barr, just because he is a private citizen, and I think there would be more of a push on pressure on him to come in. Barr can continue to use his position and, you know, to push back. And I think at some point either they'll try to do something like contempt, and then they'll move on to try to get Mueller to come in. Because that'll be something they want to hear from more than Barr, who's clearly lying. And that's the other issue, is that you have this setup where Barr is acting like he's personal attorney general to Trump and not to the American people. And that's, I don't want to say smart, because that's not the right word, but the delay tactic, that's all Trump knows how to do. It's sue, so that way it delays everything. And as we saw with Eric Holder, with the Republicans, that didn't even get resolved until well after he and Obama were out of office. So Trump's hoping that he can push this enough until either he's out of office or it's off the front pages where people aren't going to be talking about it anymore. So it's a good tactic on their end. It's a really bad tactic when you're talking about American democracy and holding up what was you know, both ends of the bargain here, where you knew that there was congressional oversight with a co-equal branch, and people responded to subpoenas seriously and didn't push back. So it's a really shameful day for democracy. And again, kind of like going back to Harry Reid and Mitch McConnell in the Senate, we're setting really new, bad, low standards for the presidency, for future presidents as well. And it's really sad.
Speaking of a travesty and shame, it was a pretty bad day for comedy with Representative Steve Cohen becoming a prop comic with the little chicken and the bucket of chicken. Tamara, as a comedian, you must have appreciated just how funny that was, right? I mean, I'm still laughing on the inside from that.
There's nothing that Congress, a politician would ever do that's funny, ha-ha, but there's funny... I see you. Okay.
it's like if your kid tells a knock knock joke, you're like, all right, sure. Yeah. that was cute.
But then I did see Kellyanne Conway today said like she was like bringing in chicken to make a point. I mean, come on, as if her party is so above such tactics.
Including herself.
But, yeah, it is an example of, you know, Michelle Obama said take the high road, and I don't think that's the high road. But
chicken road? Well, yeah. I mean, it did cross...
It's the delicious road.
The chicken did cross the road. I mean, what did there the chicken cross the high road to get to the other side? Yeah. We will get to the bottom of this.
Michelle didn't put that in the speech, so we don't know where to stand on this issue, I guess.
It's very complicated. Scott, do you have any ideas for what President Trump and Vladimir Putin might talk about on phone call for 90 minutes? If you just had to guess what a couple of the bullet points might have been.
I was like, it's Trump groveling to Putin, telling him how wonderful he is, how great he is. Mm-hmm. And then Putin's probably saying the same thing back to Trump, you know, how great he's doing. And
I mean, I can't believe we get to, like, this is like a joke. Like, this is a nightmare.
Oh, it's horrible. It's horrible. And it goes back to the point again, and I said that in a tweet, it's like, including in broad daylight. It's like, after we went through all of this, now he's like throwing it right in everyone's face, like just talking openly to Putin and not even discussing election meddling, which was the whole gist of the whole thing, which again, I we talked about this a couple weeks ago. I don't even feel like we as Democrats need to step forward too and make sure that we are making sure all precautions are met for next year.
I mean, did I hide under a rock? But is that not treason when our intelligence agencies say, this Mueller report says they interfered and then they just talked
That's why
about
I said it was colluding in broad daylight here. Like, they're just having conversations for 90 minutes that we have no idea what they're talking about, and then they don't even get to the important things like protecting American
and is
ability
there, there's
to
not
vote
a recording
safely.
Or notes or anything? We will.
There's a translator, aren't there? Aren't there
I mean,
translators?
I'm sure they have a number of recordings in Russia. You know, whether we have them or not, I feel like, well, you know, oh, if only Julian Assange wasn't in jail now, maybe he could have gotten those. Except he wouldn't have shared them with us. But I think that you know, and I'm not the first ones to point this out, but you know, when he summarized the conversation, President Trump just shows what a tenuous relationship he has with the truth, if there is one or not. He talks about the phone conversation, and you know, this isn't like he didn't FaceTime with Putin, although I'm sure he has before. And he talked about, you know, saying like, hey, how about that collusion? And he said that Putin smiled. And first of all, I don't believe that Putin has ever smiled. Second of all, if you're on the phone with him, how do you know that he smiled? So you're just embellishing the conversation, like right off the bat. And, you know, look, I do believe that he said, you know, it started as a mountain and ended up a mouse. All right, yeah, that sounds like something that, that you know, maybe I think Putin's English might be better than Trump's. But I mean, it's like, I don't know, maybe it's something that'll be a lot funnier in like 20 years from now. Mm-hmm. But I mean, it's still a little bit funny because you're just like, oh, he's not even trying. You know, I guess, is it better that we know that this phone call took place than, you know, I don't know, a month from now, it's like, what is this report about you talking to Putin for 90 minutes? Which one's better? Like, show us what you're doing or do it in private like presidents always do, Chelsea.
I
don't mean this, but like everything's usually
in
private.
I have almost no idea. I mean, there are White House logs anymore? Remember when the administration did away with that, where all visitors used to have to like sign in, and then they did away with that. So I don't know. Maybe this is not the only conversation that's been had. And they just kind of let us know about this one so that if any of them do come out, they're like, oh, yes, we told you all about mm-hmm. that.
And yeah, I mean, maybe it's their regular Thursday conversation. Like, they always talk for an hour and a half. This is the one that they talked about.
Thursdays with Vladdy.
Mm-hmm.
I would watch that. I mean, if he's on the cell horseback with his shirt off, why not? Let's see what he's up to.
I mean, treason, providing aid and comfort mm-hmm. to our enemies and a country that interferes in our elections is by definition not an ally.
I don't think you've heard, Chelsea, but I've heard many times that there was no collusion. I've heard our president say it. I've heard it on the news and several outlets. So I don't even know what you're talking about.
Trump repeated that, you know, Vladimir Putin said that there was no interference. And yeah.
If he said it, then it must be true.
And I don't know if you read the report, but then you would see, that smells of collusion, and by some definitions would meet the definition.
Even
though it's not a legal standard yet.
Mm-hmm. This doesn't literally feed into what we're talking about, but again, it's a legal issue. Chelsea, we've heard a few times in the last few days that, you know, looking at the Mueller report, if Trump wasn't president and he did everything that we know about in there, he would be up on some kind of charges. So mm-hmm. is the expectation when he's not president anymore that it's like, all right, now let's take the time to do this? Or they're just like, you know, at that point, it won't matter? Or, I mean, do you think it'll happen while he's still president?
I don't know if this has ever happened in the history of our country, so I don't have any precedent mm-hmm. to go off of. I can only imagine that the more investigation goes, there's going to come something out of probably the Southern District of New York. Mm-hmm. I can't believe something hasn't come out, like, emoluments related, but again, we should know more, except that the Trump administration is not turning anything over. So hopefully, because I would like an answer to the question, is the president or his family gaining financially from his position? That should be an easy
answer. Define family. Do you mean Jared? Because, yes. You know, I mean, he married into the family. Mm-hmm. Yes. So then the answer is probably yes.
Okay, well.
I'm just saying probably.
Well, then that's a violation mm-hmm. of the emoluments clause. And
well, wouldn't just hiring your family members be yes to that?
Apparently nepotism mm-hmm. isn't exactly the same as financial gain.
You know, it's a great mm-hmm. point. And you know who I feel bad for? Roger Clinton. Because the president's brother, I mean, he didn't even get, like, you know, he didn't even get to, like, host SNL or anything. Like, he didn't get to really cash in, mm-hmm. you know? I mean, the Bushes have done a pretty good job. I think they've all been, you know, governors of somewhere or another at some point. But, you know, everybody gets to do something except for Roger Clinton. So, Roger, this is an invitation. If you'd like to come on this show, please let me know. You can tweet me at Christian DMZ. I hope he's still alive.
Yeah, I know. Right? I was like, is he?
I just realized it's been that long since we've heard of Roger Clinton.
A couple years ago, but.
Well, you know.
I don't know.
If you're in jail, you still get to use phone calls. It's fine. You know, I know that that Chelsea is interested in talking about the economy. And before we dive into the specific thing, this China thing is going to end well, right? I mean, everybody just agrees that
China thing.
This whole China thing just can't go.
I hope nobody needs a refrigerator, a washer dryer,
or Chinese food. No, it doesn't really come from China. It's fine,
right? Because we pay those just in case you've been, I don't know, talked into believing that it's China who pays the tariffs.
There have to be people saying, like, well, you know why this is a bad idea. I mean, you have to figure that whether they're people that have official jobs in the White House or they're people who at least understand, like, you know,
why Cohen, was it Treasury or
Gary Cohen?
Yes.
Not Michael Cohen. That's a different story
from Goldman Sachs.
Right. So people around him have been telling him, but that doesn't quite matter.
But that goes back to what I was saying before, you know, everyone's talking about giving Trump credit for the economy. And I've said time and time again, it's in spite of, not because of him, that this has been ongoing. And mm-hmm. like everything else in life, he was handed a good economy. He didn't do anything. And he's done everything in his power to mess it up by throwing tariffs in there and other things like this. And we saw the stock market today drop about 500 points because of the concern about these tariffs. So it's again, he's not doing anything to help the economy. It's just been lucky that it's been continuing on this string without slowing down, and he was handed it.
And what are conservatives attributing to him as a result, the economy as a result of what that he has done?
And that it's gone up in the lowest unemployment numbers and everything else over the
yes,
past.
Yes, let's
you know.
Let's.
Well, so we and then so yeah. You have a conspiracy, and what name did we settle on before we went here?
I think the brilliant Tamara mm-hmm. came up with the best one. It's called the economy lobotomy.
Yes,
because it doesn't make sense. And here is my thought that, you know, the jobs numbers have come out, record number of jobs have been created, even though it went down, still a lot of jobs have been created. The GDP growth, 3 point something or other. Wow, that's great. Unemployment numbers way down. Everybody is employed and should be making a ton of money.
S ton of money.
And yet.
F ton.
And yet, inflation is low, and wages are still basically stuck. And they'll say, oh, but it's grown 3% from a year ago. 3% from a year ago is what it should have been if the economy was just meh. So for an economy to be so hot and for wages to still be stuck when they have been like this stuck for like 30, 40 years, they should have just like, you know, clearly, I don't use weapons, but like slingshotted forward in this hot economy.
Yeah, that is not how you use a slingshot. Even Bart Simpson and Dennis the Menace know how to use a slingshot.
So the numbers don't add up.
Is a slingshot a sports equipment?
I'm just imagining, you know, the wages have been held back, that you think when they would like be released, they would slingshot forward. So here it is. Here, you know, even people ask Jerome Powell, inflation, how is it so? Well, we don't really know. We're going to tell you what, you know, we're just watching and we don't need to raise rates. And, you know, I know the White House wants us to cut rates, but, you know, not going to do that. We're just going to wait and see if something is not transitory. And I've listened to plenty of economists and nobody can really answer how is it that with this way hot economy that inflation is what it is and the wages are what they are. And so it's led me to believe that the Trump administration might be fudging with the numbers.
Well, they're the ones that always said that Obama was doing that. And so, you know, every time you hear Trump say something like that, then you know that he's probably doing what he's projecting on other people.
That I had not heard that before, yeah. But that just now I'm sure of it. You know, either he, you know, because companies report their numbers, mm-hmm. and who's to say he's not influencing them in some way to alter what they report, or that his administration would tinker with the numbers that have been reported to him. And I know people are going to say, oh, well, you don't think he's tinkered with the stock market. Maybe not, but the stock market is not the same as the economy. What I'm talking about are these numbers, job numbers.
Unemployment be so low when every half of the people I know are unemployed.
Mm-hmm. Well, I remember a number. It wasn't even really a number, just sort of a concept that was thrown around a lot during the Obama administration. This was a theory that came out a lot from the right, was that unemployment numbers can be low because when you're on unemployment, it runs out after, you know, depending on the state, maybe 6 months, maybe mm-hmm. a little bit less, maybe a little bit more. So at that point, you're no longer counted.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So are there just like there were during, you know, the really, you know, 10, 11 years ago, you had a lot of people that were unemployed for so long that, yeah, they mm-hmm. couldn't collect unemployment anymore. Chelsea, is it possible that there's a number of that out there? Because, I don't know, I mean, we have maybe people on this show who are unemployed or barely employed. Scott is very employed, so that's why he's always too busy to be here. Yet he doesn't give us a job. But could that be?
That's why I'm still employed.
That's why you still have a job. Yeah, mm-hmm. because it's like you give away your job to somebody else. No, I don't know. Is that? I wasn't even thinking of this until you guys were talking about
that,
it.
That would not, as I could see it, impact wages.
Okay. But could there be a lot more people who are unemployed but not on an unemployment?
Well, I would say that there are a lot of people, and this was also thrown around a lot in the Obama administration during that time period, of being underemployed, where you're having people that are working but they're having to work multiple jobs or do side gigs, like driving Uber or Lyft or whatever it is to be able to make enough money. Like, people are working, but they're not getting paid enough, kind of going back to what you were saying, Tamara. And there was still even that article again, you know, in the LA Times over the weekend about just health insurance and how horrible it is and how so many people, even though they're both couples with a family, are working and they have company insurance, that they still, with such high
deductibles
that they are barely making ends meet, and they're still like half of Americans don't even have $500 in cash to cover an emergency to cover emergency health care. So to say that everyone's doing great is kind of a false narrative here, because people are underemployed and people are having to work two or three jobs just to be able to get by. They're working from 5 a.m. to 11 p.m. to be able to make ends meet. And does that mean that we're doing great with a great economy?
I mean, with the four of us, do we know of people who are just, all of a sudden doing really, really well?
Scott. Like,
he's saying that
budgets
shows
are tightening, shows are going away, companies are saying we don't want to pay anymore, they're cutting budgets. And to me, that's the first warning sign that the economy is not as strong as it was when you're cutting back and you're saying we're tightening our budgets. That's never a good thing when companies are saying that.
And these are not small companies.
Right, these are big, big Fortune 500 companies that are starting to say that. So it does lend yourself to believe that even if the numbers have been truthful, not fudge, that we're reaching that point where there's really nowhere else that we can go, and especially the duration of this expansion and already throwing out tax cuts during an expansion, not waiting until you have a recession, things like that, that they don't have anything else at their disposal now. And
I'm going to reach out to Adam Schiff and make sure he looks into this.
Yeah, I think you should, because now that you, I feel like if we just get the word out about this theory, and I hate to, like, it's so conspiratorial, and I feel like any conservative listening right now would just be like, okay, they're just going off the rails now at this point. But once you put that idea in somebody's head, they're going to start to be like, no, wait a minute.
And Fox News is great at that. But here's the thing. Even Trump Republicans, I think, and let's see if Storage Yard Resident would agree, you can't say that you would put that past Trump, right?
People. I mean, what are you going to put past him at this point?
Nothing. That's what I mean. He would tinker, change, alter, fudge numbers.
Well, that's the only thing he has. And again,
I never think he's going to actively do anything.
Oh, he's going to tell somebody.
He was like, yeah, that's a good idea. Yeah. I don't want to hear about it.
Yeah,
you know.
When you said 3 million, that's 300,000. I mean,
that's the last thing he has, and if that goes away, that's the only thing that he really has that people are at least somewhat in agreement, like you were saying, that the economy has been good under his administration.
And Scott, when you run for president, you're going to bring all this up in the debate with Trump. Because we only have a couple minutes, I wanted to talk about the New York Times has gotten their hands on 10 years of tax figures from President Trump. Now, it's for the years 1985 through 1994. So they're probably not exactly what you want.
Yeah.
But who's surprised to hear this summary? The tax numbers for the years 1985 through 1994, quote, paint a far bleaker picture of Mr. Trump's deal-making abilities and financial condition than the one he has long put forth. And to me, that's always the news source is MSN looking at the New York Times investigation. That's the link that came up. So that's the link I looked at. And so this was always my thinking, and why I was most interested in seeing them is super rich guy who says he's super rich, probably not as liquid as he'd like to have you think. Scott, are you surprised by this? And what else do you think could be found in there if maybe you get the subsequent 20 years?
I mean, I think that's what we talked about. One, he's clearly not as rich as he says he is, and that's part of the reason he doesn't want to be embarrassed. Two, there probably are some conflicts. But, I mean, that's what he's round on, that he's a multi-billionaire, and if he doesn't have the liquid assets to...
If he's as rich as he says he is, wouldn't he, like, make a copy of his tax returns for every reporter that ever came here? It's like, no, look at all this money.
So he doesn't have the money. He has some probably conflicts of interest. He probably hasn't donated a lot to charity, and so, you know, that'll bring things up.
I don't know why that was so funny to me.
And you add all that up together, besides anything else
and
that might be in there.
Crazy deductions.
Right, that he's probably paid zero taxes. And so people would be very upset when they saw it. So I think even if there wasn't the conflicts of working with Russia or other countries and emoluments and all the other issues that we that they are still investigating. And going back to that, I do hope that they deal with it after office. But I think that that's the main thing, is the embarrassment and knowing that he's a complete fraud. And that he's, you know, a snake oil salesman, and that's the thing that will take away his image.
Just a question, because I'm not sure. Alimony is a tax deduction,
it
right?
It used to be.
Oh, so at this point, was it?
Yes.
85 to 94?
Yeah. Yes, yeah, okay. Then it was.
That's
yes.
what I mean.
Yes.
All right. So that's good. Yes. But yeah, so basically, the his core businesses, largely casinos, hotels, mm-hmm. and retail space and apartment buildings, ran up to $1.17 billion in losses. So mm-hmm. this isn't necessarily surprising,
no.
but it's indicative of what you might see if you get to dig further and mm-hmm. why you're also not finding anything.
Because it's not like he figured out how to fix those losses. Like, it's just going to get...
Yeah.
His management skills aren't getting any better through the years, is what I'm saying.
No, he's a fraud, and that's the bottom line of the first reason why he doesn't want to have his taxes out there.
Well, do you think he's a fraud, audience? No. Let us know in the chat, especially if you know, the people who hate this show that watch
it. Yeah, I feel like this is going to be an especially infuriating episode.
Is President Trump a fraud? I'm not talking about as a businessman. I'm not even talking about when he becomes president. Is the art of the deal really just not something that he knows that much about? And I'd love to be convinced one way or the other.
Or if they have a better name, I don't think there could be such a better name than Tamra's.
Yes,
Economy
Lobotomy. Economy
Lobotomy.
But if there's
something, pretty good.
Well, it is good.
Yeah,
you're welcome.
And it doesn't need to make more sense than Economy Lobotomy. we unfortunately are indeed out of time. But I'd like to do a little spot of promotion that if you like this show, you'll enjoy a show that I'll begin hosting tonight right here at AfterBuzz at 9 p.m. Pacific time, dealing with a massive cover-up, lies, misinformation, deception, rampant corruption in the Russian government. No, it's not a series in the 2016 presidential election. It's Chernobyl tonight at 9 here on AfterBuzz. I'm Christian Blatt. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at ChristianDMZ. Chelsea, where do people find you?
At Chelsea Galicia.
Tamra?
Find me on YouTube at HeyTamra.
And Scott?
You can find me on Twitter because Jill Biden did not tell me that I couldn't call Trump an orange clown. SMAN80, that's SMAN80.
Personally, I find it offensive to clowns, but you know, we can talk more about that next week. Thanks so much, everybody, in the chat, and we'll see you next week.
Hi.
Our founder, Kevin Undergaro, and me, Maria Menounos, would like to thank you for tuning in to AfterBuzz TV. Remember, we're not just the first, we're the biggest in the world, and we're the only destination for all your favorite TV shows. Whatever you crave, we've got it. So go to AfterBuzzTV.com and check out our lineup. Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.